Hello and welcome to On the Record with White & Case, the podcast about the fast-paced and dynamic world of big law. Whether you're considering a career in big law, studying at law school, or already one of us, this podcast is for you. I'm Jane Kennedy, and today we're speaking with New York attorneys Paula Cates and Anna Williams. Paula is an associate in our commercial litigation group, and Anna is an associate in our debt finance corporate group. Today we'll be discussing the big question of corporate or litigation practice, how they decided which career path they wanted to pursue, and the skills needed to be successful in each. Anna, Paula, how are you both today?
Good. Thanks so much for having us today. I'm really excited for the opportunity.
Yeah, thanks so much for the chance for the conversation.
Thank you both so much for being with us. So I wanted to kick us off, take us back a little step, and just kind of to ask you both when it was that you decided that you wanted to be lawyers, and secondly, big law lawyers.
The answer to that question might be when I was about five. There was some variation in the path along the way, but certainly from a young age, I knew I wanted to be a lawyer. My mom was a lawyer. My grandfather was a lawyer. So it was an easy family trend to pick up. When you're five, you don't know about big law. So I can't say I was committed to that path from day one. But certainly by the time I was in law school and starting to dabble, I tried a little bit of everything. And big law just seemed like a good opportunity to develop skills that would, you know, law school is all great. And Anna might agree with me on this, but it doesn't teach you the day-to-day skills of lawyering. And big law is actually quite a good place to develop those skills. So regardless of what you might plan to do in life, it's a great place to go out of law school.
Excellent. I can imagine that there'd be some really good conversations around the dinner table having a mom and a granddad who were lawyers.
Criminal defense lawyer, so a little bit different. But yes, it certainly makes family debates exciting.
Brilliant. And Anna, what about yourself?
Yeah, as for me, I did not know that I wanted to be a lawyer that early. I think it was at some point in college where I had majored in psychology and human rights, and then I went more towards the human rights side, so I wanted to be a human rights lawyer. And then I had this one internship at a law firm here in New York, and it was more on like the human capital management side. And so that was my very first exposure to big law. And I was like, okay, I kind of like this space. It is law. It's not quite human rights law, but there's pro bono available. And after that internship experience, I decided to go back full time. And so I did that before law school, confirmed that I wanted to come back to big law. And that's where I ended up.
Excellent. It sounds like you've had a lot of experience even before you'd made that decision. And can I ask you both, I mean, obviously, it is a decision making process. What drew you specifically to White & Case as a firm?
The international aspect of the firm, both in the fact that it has a more international outlook, it has more international offices, but also the type of work we're doing and specifically pro bono work opportunities. I was also a human rights international law type, and being able to come to a firm where I could be doing classic big law work but still scratch that itch, it's something I'm intellectually very passionate and curious about. So that was definitely a big draw to White & Case.
I agree. And on top of that, I think for me, just having the insight into the people at White & Case, and just knowing that the people are also very international, and to know that people speak different languages on a day-to-day, that the work kind of bleeds across borders, across offices, that was really appealing to me. And that has been confirmed in my time at the firm.
Brilliant. And Anna, you speak multiple languages. Can you give us a bit of insight into how that came about? Because it's not just one, two, I think it's four?
Yeah, that's a surprising part. So my family is from Ghana, and so my parents speak two different dialects, and I can speak those kind of, not like fluently, but I can speak those languages. But I was born in Italy, so my first language is Italian, and then I learned English here when I moved to the U.S. And I also picked up a little bit of Spanish because it was the language closest to Italian at the time.
Excellent. And Paula, for yourself?
Yeah, I've got Russian and French. My family is Russian, so I picked that up at home, learned French in school.
And I think through the halls of White & Case, you do hear these different languages. Have you been able to put these skills into effect during your time with us?
Yeah, I actually, during my first year at the firm, got tapped for a Russian language doc review. It turned out there were only three first years with any Russian across the entire firm. So the three of us got tapped because the translation process takes so long, and they really wanted, it was a white collar matter. They wanted to move the investigation forward before the translations could come through. So that was really an interesting experience.
Yeah. And for myself, I have not had the opportunity to use any of my language skills just yet. So I don't know if people need something in Italian, let me know.
Excellent. So, and I know that this is probably a question that you get quite frequently, but can you take us through the day in the life of, firstly, an associate, and then we'll dig deeper into the actual practice itself? What does that look like?
Sure. Day in the life of a rising second year associate. typically, I'm for sure online by 9 a.m., answering the emails that have come through, let's say, overnight, especially if we're dealing with our colleagues in other offices with different time zones. Just spend a few hours in the morning answering requests. So on the debt finance side, a lot of the work can be categorized as general corporate work. So maybe inputting comments or getting some documents finalized and just doing general correspondence with our clients. So it's a mix of correspondence, doing things on my own, offline, editing things, and just kind of keeping the process going throughout the day.
Yeah, and on the litigation side, I would say in the mornings, it's usually a good time to do longer term assignments or projects. So legal research, any drafting I'm trying to get done, good to do in the morning. And then usually probably around, you know, 11, 1130, people start to add more things to your plate. The calls stack up, the meetings stack up. And a lot of the afternoon is almost figuring out what I'll be doing the next morning.
And just to kind of, you know, demystify big law a little bit. I mean, I personally, before I came into the realm of big law, just thought it was all about deadlines and pressure. Is it like that?
For me, it's a little bit more, I would say, random, but not too random, because you kind of know what's going on and you can kind of expect the things that should come up throughout the day or throughout the week. You know, it could be quiet from, let's say, 11 to 3. And then maybe you'll get a bunch of documents coming in from the other side starting at 5 o'clock. And so there could be like a big push for an hour or so, and then it's quiet again, and then maybe it picks up again. And so throughout the day, it's a little bit more dynamic, which I appreciate.
Yeah, so I would say for the day, it's that as well. It's just like, when do people bother getting back to you? You know, when you send all your emails out in the morning, you send out 10 emails and then they trickle back in. And so it'll ebb and flow. I feel like you can usually get a little bit of a lunch lull and then people like ramp up again after that. The closer you get to a filing, the more hectic it'll be. So it's more of like a slow rise and then it crashes after the filing and then a slow build to the next deadline. In something like bankruptcy work, which is a lot faster paced, it's probably going to be, if you're on one of those cases, you're going from one thing to the next, but they're shorter term cases. Whereas litigation, I mean, I was on a case that started in 2015 and settled like 2 months ago. So those can really drag out.
That's incredible. I think on average, the deals that I'm on maybe last like 4, maybe 6 weeks. Yeah. Or some could be done within a week. So that's very, very different.
Well, I actually, back in the summer of 2020, I was staffed on a new case that had come in, which actually was a bankruptcy. We represented personal injury victims against the debtor corporation. And, you know, it happened in 2020. I forgot about it. And then 2 months ago, it came back because it got appealed up to the Supreme Court. And last week, I was in Washington, D.C. for the argument. We were all sort of sitting around the table, thinking back to where we had been when the case had started and how much had changed since then.
My goodness. So is there a particular case that stands out in your minds that have either been the most exciting or you've learned the most from?
One of the most exciting litigations I've worked on where I learned a lot was a adversary proceeding coming out of a bankruptcy, which concerned an environmental remediation site or several EPA Superfund sites. The entity we represented had gone bankrupt, so we represented the liquidating trust. And prior to that, it had been owned by an Argentinian oil company and then a Spanish oil company. So there were all these cross-border issues about who owned what when and the discovery process. So that case was one just like fascinating. We don't get a lot of cases that have to do with environmental remediation. I learned a lot about how that works, EPA Superfund sites work, all of that. But from like a skills standpoint, it was a fascinating doc review, which is not something we say often in litigation, but it had documents going back to the early 90s. A lot of the documents were in Spanish, so, you know, maybe we could have used your language skills. you know, and navigating that, a lot of the witnesses for depositions, we were dealing with different time zones, different countries, different rules for depositions, language issues and translator issues. The briefing on that was super complex and technical, both on the litigation side and the bankruptcy side. I remember it was just a summer of nonstop docs and depot prep and then straight into expert reports and managing experts directly. It was a really great experience, which happened to be coupled with really interesting facts and an interesting case that you could really sink your teeth into, let's say.
Yeah, on my side, I don't know if I can get into that much detail, but I was on this one deal, and this deal did involve so many different groups from the firm, so it was kind of nice to be able to be a part of that. So the FRI team was kind of handling the restructuring, and I think it was mostly a deal under that group. And then I was on the subset of a debt finance piece. And so for me, that was really interesting because the subject matter, the company was interesting as a whole, but also how public it was. I think that was the first time that I was involved in a matter that was so public and that, you know, all of our like daily entries were going to be released and having that pressure to kind of be on point with what I was doing. What I really liked about that particular matter was just kind of the growth that I had to kind of go through in that 4-week span, where I step in not knowing anything about what's going on, and then by the end of it, you know, I'm running the daily like checklists and setting up the calls and kind of making sure that everything is being taken care of. And we had so many lenders involved. And their letters of credit and all these other financial pieces that needed to be in place. And so it was really cool to be a part of that and to be able to like really provide that service to our client.
Excellent. In terms of, looking back at law school, was there any skills that you acquired at law school that you think are helpful when you're practicing on a day-to-day as an associate at White & Case?
The skills that law school focuses on, I think, generally lends itself to litigation more than corporate work. I think I've actually heard that from corporate-minded people that it can be frustrating in law school, but I'll let Anna speak to that. But as a litigator, the skills you're learning in law school are going to be very transferable. I think really law school is a great opportunity to hone legal research skills, and that sounds trite, but the better you can develop those skills and the better you get at that, the more efficient you'll be at it in the firm setting and the faster you'll be able to get to the answers you need. So I think that's crucial. I mean, you have time in law school to just sort of like play around with these tools, get used to using them, and become more efficient at that type of work. Also, you're going to be doing a lot of drafting in law school. And candidly, the first year or two you're at a firm, you're probably doing less overall drafting. You're going to be doing maybe smaller pieces of that. So one thing you could do in law school is really practice the skill or understand how a full motion brief looks, like what a full brief looks like holistically. And that way, when you get to the firm and you're sort of slotted into your little piece, you have a better idea of how what you're doing fits into the bigger picture and you can contribute more effectively to that.
I would agree that law school did not really prepare me for my day-to-day corporate life or what I do here. But yeah, I would say that law school is very helpful in terms of getting the drafting skills, research skills, and those skills in general are kind of still applicable as a corporate associate in that it's all about how you approach issues or how you look for solutions, right? And so I may not necessarily use LexisNexis or Westlaw on a day-to-day, but when presented with a problem or let's say an issue that I don't necessarily know how to solve or I know that I'm responsible for handling that, just having the same approach and like, okay, what is step one? Where do I go? What is step two? Who can I speak to? What resources do we have available? Another really, really helpful piece is just the involvement in clinics on campus. So I was involved in the trademarks clinic, and so that was like more of an IP route, but still just getting that experience and interacting with clients, having client deliverables, having, keeping things in place, having to correspond with people, having to file documents. These are all skills that you need to have on a day-to-day, let's say as a corporate associate specifically. And so I was grateful for that experience.
And how did you decide on which summer program to be a part of to start really building that skill set for, your practice?
my summer experience started a little bit early. So I was a one-all diversity fellow here at White & Case. So that decision came, you know, one semester into law school. In terms of the things that I looked for summer programs, I definitely wanted to be at a law firm that had kind of like a rotational or just like a general availability of different practice groups that I could try in different matters and different things. I wanted to be at an international law firm, and to get that experience as a 1L summer associate was incredible. And so then that absolutely influenced my decision to come back for my second summer. And I would say that both opportunities were virtual because of the pandemic. And so for me, it was really about the content and the true experience I was going to get.
Yeah, for me, so when I started my summer at White & Case, I originally said I would split, you know, I think I said 6 weeks litigation, 4 weeks corporate. I think I tried for 8 weeks litigation, 2 weeks corporate, and recruiting was like, that's not a meaningful experience in corporate. But I did litigation first, and about 2 weeks in, sort of realized that it wasn't a contest. I loved litigation. It clicks with how my brain works and all of that. And so I wound up canceling my corporate rotation. But I spent my time in the litigation group trying different types of the practice. Specifically, I really wanted to try out international arbitration. That's something that White & Case has a fantastic practice in, which you have zero exposure to basically in law school. So it was really interesting to just try out different things that I couldn't access through law school. I really used it as an opportunity to meet a bunch of people. Like, I really tried to work with as many different people and just see what the practice looked like holistically. It was just getting to sit in someone's office, or, you know, at the time we had the Flint litigation, and getting to have lunch with the associate running that and just hear all about that experience. It was the World Cup my summer, so the firm took that very seriously. We were showing soccer games on every TV in the firm, and people would gather together to watch and sort of have a good time. And so it was a very community-building experience as well as the work experience. And that's important because, you know, we spend a lot of time with our coworkers, and you want to know that you can, you know, have a conversation with them on top of everything else.
Yeah. And I just want to add that I think I had I was just so blessed to have the two summers to try out so many different groups. Mm-hmm. So I came in with a strong interest in antitrust. And I knew that I was going to be a part of our IP clinic. So I was, you know, like, that was very much on brand. And so the second summer, I was like, okay, maybe I could try a little bit more corporate work. So the very first thing I did was debt finance. Absolutely loved it. It was so dynamic. It was so interesting. It was so fast-paced that I decided immediately that I wanted to switch sides.
Excellent. And when we speak about debt finance, could you go into that a little bit more, Anna? Like, what is that, you know, as a, you know, coming from law school and, you know, really focusing on the litigation side, what, you know, what does that look like?
Within the, underneath the corporate umbrella, I would say that that finance fits in the banking world. And so you are either representing financial institutions or companies in financing, right? Or acquisition financing, general day-to-day financing. And there are so many ways to go about it, but the work, it kind of exists in that space. And so as a law student, I think, you know, taking a contracts class might be an early exposure, but also if there's any banking-related courses at the law schools, that might be a window into the space. One thing that's been really surprising in the group is just the work that involves AI and kind of how AI is used for day-to-day project management. There is natural language processing involved, automated forms, and so many other resources that the group is kind of like at the forefront of within the industry. And so it's really part to be, it's really interesting and exciting to be part of this group.
Brilliant. And Paula, you'd said that, you know, your title is commercial litigation, but you'd spoke about working with, you know, personal injury victims. You know, what kind of sphere does commercial litigation encompass?
Yeah, so, I mean, litigation is such a broad concept. In every case that comes along, we're sort of developing a specialization that we didn't previously have. So the personal injury victims, that would be an example where I just learned about tort law all over the country and public nuisance law and abatement law and how those intersect with bankruptcy. I've done a lot of bankruptcy work, so learning different aspects of that. The environmental remediation stuff came up there. Contract work, I had at least one case that intersected with the IP group. So it was a contract dispute arising out of a patent dispute. So there's two sides of the case, and I had to learn a little bit more about that. But yeah, you just sort of keep developing these random areas of knowledge that you accumulate. And if another case comes along, you know, you're like, okay, well, now we know someone. You know, I was on a bankruptcy case where my one job was just learning everything about class actions in the bankruptcy context. And when the next situation or bankruptcy came along with a lot of class actions, our team got tapped to sort of step in and advise on how to handle that situation. So yeah, it really is a little bit of everything. Litigation just is such a broad concept generally.
Excellent. And was there any resources throughout, you know, the summer and as a first year associate that you leveraged in helping you make that decision, whether it was you were going to pursue corporate or litigation?
I spoke a lot with other people. So part of why I originally did split my summer is a partner had suggested it under the mindset that most litigation work we're doing at the firm is coming out of something in corporate. I remember he used to say the corporate side, you know, they like to build things, like build bridges. And then litigation comes along when the bridge collapses and is sorting through the rubble to see what went wrong. So because of that, you know, if I have a case that comes out of the capital markets group, I need to have some sense of what's going on over there. So that's why splitting can be good. And that partner who was disappointed in me when I eventually canceled my corporate rotation, he specifically put me on a summer project where I had to learn some corporate things and like engage with the corporate side of the deal because he was like, you need to develop these skills. That's important. So a summer is 10 weeks. There's only so many things you can try. You can try more on the corporate side because things move a little faster. In litigation, you're really just picking up bits and pieces of projects here and there. So I think it is really crucial if you're interested in litigation to talk to other people, have coffees, ask them about their practice area, ask them about their day-to-day work, and form those connections because it's just so hard to get a big picture sense of what litigation looks like in a 10-week summer. But by like talking to other people and connecting with them, I think you can get a better sense of it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the best resource at the firm would be the people. And so just talking to people throughout the summer program would be, the best way to approach that. And as a first year, I think the approach is the same. You know, once you join the firm, you still kind of have to rely on people to like get exposed to as much as you can and to talk to different partners, senior associates, the junior associates, because everyone's going to have some type of input.
And I think it's important to emphasize that they're not separate. There are people I met during my summer that when I came back, you know, a year and change later, I managed to, like my first big case I got staffed on, which was fairly quick when I got back, was because the senior associate and the mid-level on the case remembered me from the summer. The mid-level I had worked with, so she could sort of attest to me having some skills. But the senior associate was just someone I'd gotten coffee with as a summer. And then I came back and said, hey, I'd love to work with you. She spoke to the mid-level who said, okay, yeah, I have worked with her. We should bring her on. And that's, you know, how I got my first 3 months of work at the firm based off of relationships that I had developed over my summer.
Yeah, and I think that reminds me of just the structure of the mentors and the buddies that you have like during the summer program. These relationships really do go beyond the summer experience, and the mentors that I had then are still my partner mentors now, and we have like quarterly check-ins. I got some of my first assignments through those relationships, and the buddies who are now, you know, more senior have been people that have kind of guided me through this process since I've started at the firm.
Brilliant. So we want to take you a little bit off the record with White & Case, and we want you to really think about, a funny moment from your career where things maybe didn't go as you expected and, you know, how you overcame that.
I have the most embarrassing thing I've done at the firm, if that counts.
It does. Yeah.
Well, when I was in eager first year, the pro bono counsel emailed out a pro bono opportunity, and I was very excited about it. And I replied all to the email. And it was a reply all to every associate and counsel in White & Case globally. And I cannot express the degree to which I wanted the earth to open up beneath me and swallow me whole. And, you know, we were fully in the office back then, and I sent it at about 9 a.m. right before I commuted in. And by the time I walked into the office, I'd already gotten 20 responses back from friends, shall we say, kindly pointing out my mistake. And then I had to spend the rest of the day with everyone saying, well, I hear you're really excited about that pro bono opportunity that came along. But actually, it was a funny experience, and everyone was very kind about it, and yeah, it makes for a good story.
That's tough. That's really tough. I guess I similarly had a mistake. Okay, but it wasn't a reply all. It was more so I was handling the calendar invitations for this one deal, and it involved so many people, like our clients, our internal deal team, our colleagues at the firm, just so many people and big pressure situation. I was like, okay, I could do this. And so I'm thinking that, like, I have the date, the time, the information correctly, and I hit send. And then as soon as I hit send, I realized that the date is like a month or two from now. This is supposed to be like tomorrow, right? So the information is just wrong. And I'm like, okay, freaking out. Let me just fix it really quick. So quickly just like change it to like the next day and like send it. As soon as it sends, I see that there's another mistake where the time is wrong, like by like 9 a.m. versus, let's say, like a 3 p.m. thing. So then I'm like, okay, I'll just change it again. Like, whatever. No one's going to know. Like, then I start getting jabbers from the partner. And the partner doesn't really jabber. So I was like, oh, maybe it's like, oh, thanks for fixing it. But it was like, Anna, it is still wrong. Can you please take a moment and then fix it? I was like, yes, we'll do.
It happens. Check those emails. Well, thank you both so much for being with us today. We really appreciate you sharing your insights with us. And it's been a pleasure to speak with you today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, it's been fun.
You can learn more about our work, our people, and the opportunities we offer at inside.whitecase.com and on our social media channels. Find us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram at Whitecase. On the Record is for you, our listeners, so we want to hear from you. Email your thoughts, questions, and topic ideas to us at usgradrecruiting@whitecase.com. Please subscribe in your favourite podcast app so you don't miss out on more episodes. Thanks for listening.